Blog Talk Radio.
Oh. Yep, it's gonna start a few.
Hi. All right, it's my email.
Hello, and welcome back to True Crimes Podcast. Today I have a returning guest, Nasir Ahmad, who is a holistic physician with an interest in criminal psychology. He's here today as the editor of themurderofmeredithkircher.com, which has the most complete collection of case files and English language translated documents on the web. He reviewed Amanda Knox, the documentary, when it first came out at the Toronto International Film Festival, and here tonight he will present his views. Hi, Nasir, how are you?
Hello, Liz, how are you? Thanks for having me back on the show.
Yes, thank you for being on. It's great to hear from you again. So, just to give people some background, what got you interested in this case? The murder of Meredith Kircher.
Thank you. I was flying out of Manchester Airport, just a little bit north of Meredith Kircher's University, when the just before the actual murder came out. And when I arrived back in Toronto, then the news was all over about Meredith Kircher's case. And it was very odd because at the same time, I'd also been interested in the case of the missing Madeline McCann, who, as you know, is the missing child in Portugal, and she never was found. And somehow the two cases became intertwined, and I saw a lot of similarities, like, for example, people being passionately involved in the case, that there was volunteers who were translating the Portuguese language documents because there was this prejudice against the Portuguese police because the media was presenting one side and Portuguese people were saying, well, no, actually, the prosecution was doing a good job and so on. And I saw the parallels, quite a few parallels between that and Meredith Kircher. And the DNA, for example, was one example, but there were quite a few other similarities, a lot of mystery. Who did it? Was it Amanda Knox? Was it the parents? Was it an accident, or was it something more insidious, and so on? But what really got me into the case was the background PR, and there were very powerful PR agencies that were working on both cases, trying to present one side of the view, and that's where I really got interested in it, because the shaping of public opinion using psychology is one of the interests that I have.
Yes, yes, and we did a podcast about the similarities between the Amanda Knox and Madeline McCann cases.
That's correct.
Yeah, there are so many similarities, yeah. All right, so now back to the Amanda Knox documentary. Mm-hmm. It looks like the filmmakers went to great lengths to interview the, quote, principal players of the case. Though it seems that many of the things said have already been covered in the media with Amanda Knox and her book and TV appearances. So in your opinion, does this documentary have anything new or original to add to our understanding of this case?
No, it's been said and done many times before. The supporters of Amanda Knox, an organization called the Friends of Amanda Knox, were friendsofamanda.org. They were blaming English media, the sensational reporting about Foxy Knoxy and how many lovers she had and the whole thing about Italian patriarchy and misogyny and all those buzzwords which really sort of try to paint the case as against Amanda Knox as just, well, American girl, very quirky. She just got into a bad situation in Italy, and the prosecution unfairly targeted her, though I really thought that it was an unfair, it really was an unfair portrayal, and it really, maybe we can talk a little bit more about what I call the Netflix template, but maybe later on, but it seemed to me that they only presented one side of the story.
Right. So, and how about even after the movie and when people were giving reviews in the media and various magazines, in your opinion, did they seem to be similar? And I wanted to know your opinion. They all seem to be very supportive of it, and they all seem to use the same language. Why do you think this happens?
Well, having lived in Hollywood for a couple of years and working with industry players, and I got to see that it looked like just a sort of press kit that they hand out to reviewers. The Toronto Festival, Film Festival, shows hundreds of movies, and reviewers don't have the time to actually see everything in detail or to write impressions. So that's why they were very similar, because they were all talking points that they lifted off of the press kits. And
right.
The basic talking points were the media and the prosecution were at fault. But that's the Netflix template, you know, where they try to exonerate people who had been tried and found guilty, and they were really just following the formula of the making of a murderer with Stephen Avery and
right.
trying to present. So then it's almost exactly the same question where they say, is he guilty or is he innocent? Was he railroaded or was he not? Is he a psychopath or is he not? And then Amanda Knox repeats exactly the same thing in this documentary.
Right, right. Yeah, it's the same thing over and over, and at the end, Netflix always seems to side with the defense.
True.
Okay.
Yeah, and it may be because they have access to a different side of the story, the whole idea. Nowadays, it seems that the prosecution has to be demonized in every case, and it's not to say that the justice system in the United States or in Italy is perfect. It isn't. But at the same time, you do have to, at least in the system of justice, if that were to work, then you do have to have some sort of trust in the system. And it really is unfortunate that just in pursuit of ratings, that they should go and produce biased documentaries out of sensationalism and not be fair or accurate. And in my opinion, this documentary was tremendously biased and unfair.
And just to slip in there, you keep saying about the prosecution. Compared to how many prosecutors actually found Amanda Knox and Raphael Sletchto guilty, but in the documentary, they made it seem as if it were just one prosecutor.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Well, in the Italian system, it actually is very friendly to defendants in that it automatically allows them a guaranteed right of appeal, which is not present in the United States. If in the United States, then you were to have a conviction of murder in the trial, then you very rarely are given right to appeal, and it does not go to the Supreme Court, hardly ever. But in Italy, it is a guaranteed right, and therefore there were several prosecutors, not just Menini, but also a female prosecutor, Manuela Comodi, who was there too, and she was almost the lead prosecutor in some ways. In fact, she was co-prosecutor and to present it as, okay, Menini is a misogynist, and really it was driven. The whole prosecution was in fact driven by women. That you had Prosecutor Manuela Comodi, you had the scientific police DNA specialist, Dr. Patricia Stefanoni, and so on, and Chief Inspector Monica Napoleoni. So that was really one of the glaring omissions that they presented, and the whole thing was a form of vilification of Italy, which I thought was unfair. That and the underlying racism behind all of that she accused a innocent black a man, her boss, who had fired her and wasn't expecting her to come to work anymore, and she promptly accused him of murder and caused him to lose his business. That was also something that was left out of the documentary. It was glossed over. It was only presented through a one-sided prism, and they demonized both the prosecutor but also the reporter, Nick Pisa.
Oh, yes. Yes, it seemed that as if there were only one reporter covering it. They seemed to everybody sort of jump on him, right?
Yes, let's he was quite a wonderful villain, actually. He should just have had a mustache and twirled it, and he was laughing and he was joking about it. And you know the funny thing? Look, I saw it when it came out, and the audience was not so much laughing at him. In a couple of cases, they were laughing with him. Like, for example, when he said, "Well, Amanda Knox is a complete loon." And the audience laughed with him. It's not like they were shocked and saying, "Oh, he's so prejudiced and this and that." And the other thing is that it's very odd, the way the filmmakers framed that movie. Now, first of all, there's a background, and that is that the filmmakers actually went and they presented themselves to Prosecutor Menini as completely neutral and independent. It was approached by the Danish filmmaker, the producer Mette Heide, and she he checked her out, said, "Okay, she's done a documentary, The Queen of Versailles, which actually is quite funny and wonderful, and I liked it very much." And he just checked her out and said, "Okay, well, she's unbiased, and that's interesting." They also approached the Kirchers, by the way, and asked for their participation, but the Kirchers didn't reply. And they just said, "Well, I guess they're okay. We sent a copy of the film. They must be okay with that." But that's an assumption. Anyway, regardless, it actually turned out through investigation that they had another producer who was actively involved in the film, working with the directors, the co-directors, Brian McGinn and Rod Blackhurst. And those three of them, there was the producer, Stephen Robert Morse, had really screamed abuse at Nick Pisa. He called him a piece of shit in Perugia. He had been tweeting and blogging endlessly about how rotten the media was and how bad Prosecutor Menini was. And even though he tried to delete some of his more inflammatory posts, it turned out that Blackhurst and McGinn had also been actively involved in promoting Amanda Knox's innocence. And yet, if they had only revealed their background at the time, but Morse hid his producer's credit till the last moment. And then we were checking IMDb, and we only saw Mette Heide as the producer. And then all of a sudden, Morse is now listed as co-producer, which was very odd. And it turned out, once I saw the movie, once a lot of other reviewers saw the movie, those who follow the case, and they know that, well, there was a whole series of glaring omissions, which I'd be happy to
right. Mention. So the co-producer Morse had been attacking Nick Pisa since 2011, Did it go back that far? He had been tweeting abuse about him, and then he just suddenly appeared at the last minute as a producer, right?
Yeah. And he actually, he tried to delete some of his tweets, but we tend to find that not everything can be deleted. It always exists somewhere or the other in the internet, and we found a lot of his old posts. And after Rod Blackhurst was called out and copies of his screenshots of his tweets were published, then he actually deleted his Twitter account. So,
wow.
There you go.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what is your overall impression of the movie?
Well, I think that, first of all, if you look at the movie and you say, okay, it follows your standard documentary narrative. It has the protagonist, and that's Amanda Knox, and is she guilty or not? And then you can say, on the one hand, I mean, very superficially, you say, oh, okay, she acted very strangely. She did cartwheels. She had brought a lot of strange men home, and et cetera, and the evidence seemed very strong at first, but then it got exaggerated. So you have several main characters in this, and they are Amanda Knox, who takes center. She starts and ends the documentary, and the way it's bracketed and everything in between, then it literally reads like everything that she accuses the prosecution of doing in the her book actually is reflected, and in her media interviews is reflected in the documentary. So you have several main characters. You have Amanda Knox, you have Raffaele Sollecito, the co-accused, who is he's just there as a accessory for Amanda Knox. He doesn't do much. They try to show him, oh, he's a hottie, he's a cutie, he's a hottie. He was in pictures of him as a child, as an altar boy, you know, and of course him with a cleaver. But and well, he's innocent and he had nothing to do with it. But then they forget to mention that the reason why Amanda Knox was arrested was because he refused to corroborate her alibi, and that. Whatever he may try to say afterwards, the fact is that until they were acquitted, then his family were trying to leak evidence to us of Amanda Knox being involved with cocaine dealers. And ultimately, I think that the movie itself is not original. It is terribly biased, and it's also... in the end, it's flawed as a documentary because it is not honest. It really is an abuse of trust to the audience, because the audience, you look at the documentary and you'd expect it to be at least neutral and present both sides of a story, but no, it turns out as badly made propaganda. It's too hokey, and in the end, Amanda Knox is terribly, terribly unsympathetic. She can't even, when asked in that interview, which was on the Diane Sawyer interview, I believe, when they said, "Did you murder Meredith Kircher?" Then, in the original interview, she says no, but she nods yes, and that got cut off. And another little thing that got cut off, just to sanitize her image a little bit, was the fact of Amanda Knox posing with a machine gun. But they removed the caption on her MySpace blog, which went, Amanda Knox, the inner Nazi, you know, the Nazi within, which has to do with her German heritage. I think she thought it was funny, and that perhaps that's what teenagers do anyway, but which she was at the time. But the filmmaker deleted that, and I thought that was dishonest of them. And but there are a few comments that I have to make about the people who were shown in the film. First of all, you also have the DNA specialists, Stefanoni, Professors Conti and Vecchiotti. And what the filmmakers, they allow her to make all these accusations of contamination and health and imply that Stefanoni's lab wasn't clean. But actually, as it turns out, then Professor Vecchiotti, who works for the La Sapienza University in Rome, and her father, or rather the defense attorney, Giulia Bongiorno, her father works at the university too as a writer in criminal law. And that was somehow they managed to get the position of independent expert, and that's how they present it in the movie. But they weren't. Actually, Professor Vecchiotti had been sanctioned. In fact, she was sentenced for maintaining a poor quality lab for contamination in her lab, yet she accused Stefanoni's lab of contamination, which was never proven, only implied. And it turned out that her report was written in America by a professor out of Boise State University, the Idaho Innocent Project, which is Professor Hampikian. He's going around saying he wrote the report. So it really is very odd all around. And that was left out by the filmmakers, and I thought that was a glaring omission. And the other one was Walter Biscotti, Rudy Gaudet's lawyer. And he was cut out almost entirely. He just had a line in there which was the second funniest line after Amanda Knox being the loon. And it was just that, and he was responding to Americans going and criticizing the Italian system of law, even though Perugia had the world's first, European first University of Law in 1308, while Americans were painting buffaloes and cakes. And that was funny, even though, yes, it's true, they were, but that was the only line he was allowed to say. Yet, actually, it turns out that he had presented quite a defense of Rudy Gaudet as not being the only one involved in the crime, yet that got cut off entirely. And that is one of the many series of omissions. But the other one is this. They presented prosecutors Menini as they bracketed many scenes of him praying and talking about God and personal responsibility and how important his faith was, and made it seem like he was accusing Amanda Knox because of her promiscuity, so-called, quote-unquote. But the funny thing is that actually, even he said so many times that even in the movie, no, she was there. She was arrested because of the evidence against her. He does not make moral judgments. And they mistranslated some of the words he said, that subtitles do not match what he said in the Italian, but no one's going to catch that. They asked him a question, if they are innocent, what would you say to them? And that was a rhetorical question. He replied in the like manner, but they cut out the question, and they made it seem like he was entertaining thoughts of their innocence, and so on and so forth. It really went, it was unfair, but not only that, it wasn't original, because it repeats what Amanda Knox says. It repeats the American media portrayal of it being a railroad job from hell by an insane Satan-obsessed prosecutor, and it even misrepresents him. There's a line in which he says he's getting congratulated by people in the street, and the McGinn and Blackhurst imply that that had to do with because he got Madinox convicted. And actually, that he was referring to a different case altogether, which is the Monster of Florence case, which the Narducci killing. And he won. He was exonerated. And for that, that's when people were coming up to him and shaking his hand. But the producers were dishonest about that portrayal as well.
Wow. And they left out a lot of evidence of Madinox and Raphael Sletchito. You know, they left out their DNA and mixed with the Meredith Kircher's blood in the hallway and the bathroom and the stage breaking room, and they're changing alibi. There's so much that was missing.
Yes, I know. It's like, and in the end, all I can say is this. Ever since the documentary came out, then we've had a huge increase of visitors to the murder of MeredithKircher.com, the site that was referred to originally. It's available through Google and on your website, the links to that site. People should read the evidence and make up their own minds rather than let their minds be made up by a biased and very unoriginal documentary.
Yes, they can find all the evidence at themurderofmeredithkircher.com. We have a few minutes left. I want a question about the video. Now, the one original nice thing to see in this documentary and that most people I'd never seen before was that video of Meredith Kircher in the beginning.
Yes.
Do you know how Madinox came to get that film, that clip of her?
Yes, it's in her book, and it turns out that Meredith was at the Euro Chocolate Festival, and Amanda Knox came up to her with her camera and wanted to take a video. Meredith did not want her picture to be taken and refused, but Amanda Knox took it anyway and took that video, and then she sent it through friends or through email to her friends in America, and that's why that video was not found in the memory card of the phone, because all we have in the case files are some pictures of her and Raffaele Sollecito and not that video. And it was very sad because Meredith didn't have a say in that even at the last. She did not want her video taken. And, of course, if the Kirchers knew about that, then I'm sure they would be very, very hurt to see that as well. And that's why. But they really avoid any contact with the media with very good reason, because they would only be misrepresented. And there was another moment in that movie, and that is Arlene Kircher giving an interview in the street. Some cameraman came up to her and asked her for comment on the acquittal, and she just expressed her disappointment at the time about how unfair the system seemed to be and how odd it was, how perplexed the family were to have two convictions and two acquittals. And in the end, they were no closer to an answer. So one can only feel for Meredith Kircher's family.
Yes. And I noticed somebody else made the comment as well that they didn't even put "Rest in Peace, Meredith Kircher" at the end of the documentary in the credits.
Yes.
Which is very sad.
It is very sad, but unfortunately, it really looked like an Amanda Knox production from beginning to end, and was... So perhaps that is all very well. It was made with her full cooperation by people who had been in contact with her for many years and who had been advocating for her, and that is why she gave them that access to present her side. And it was, therefore, all I can say is the final story has not yet been written.
Yes. Okay, well, Nasir, we're out of time, but thank you again for being on the show. And people can visit The Murder of Meredith Kircher to learn about all the evidence and all the court documents. Nasir, thank you so much again for being on True Crimes Podcast.
Thank you. Good night, Liz.
Good night. Take care.
You too.